be aware of. And then hopefully that will kind of balance itself out. So we'll start with the interface. Obviously, this is not the type of interface we want to be building. You know, as much as Metro, I guess we can't call it that anymore, but you know, these interfaces pose an interesting challenge, and so we need frameworks to help the plumbing along. Obviously, that is not the type of interface we want to be building, but there are a lot of great frameworks and tools out there that you can certainly use. The Windows Phone Toolkit, this is a wonderful framework that should and can be adopted in your applications. The latest build was pushed out on August 15th, and there's a wonderful set of components available in there. This can be incorporated into your development environment very easily via NuGet. NuGet, which is our package management system for frameworks and services available via the command line or via Visual Studio. We can obviously download the source code if we want, make changes, things like that. Another framework that I would recommend is Callisto. Obviously, Tim has been doing a little bit of work in here. This is interesting in the sense that this has been around for a little bit, and it does provide some interesting scenarios to target. He provides a source available up on GitHub and can be brought down via NuGet as well. There are many other frameworks as well, and obviously, being a Telerik, we have our own. But I just wanted to cite those two as examples. And no presentation would be complete without a demo. So what I'd like to do is just jump over to my machine here. And let's just take a look at some of these. Yes, it works. I have a Lenovo, and I don't know if anyone else does, but it's a wonderful machine, but sometimes it just doesn't like displays, and I had some problems with it earlier. So yes, it's working, fantastic. So what I'd like to do is just show you a little bit of some of the tools that we have. So obviously you can go up and download some of these tools. If you haven't seen these before, they're great for building out applications. There's the Windows Phone Toolkit itself, which contains a whole boatload of components that you can go ahead and grab. Many of these are very basic in their nature, but they do solve a real need when targeting these types of apps. And if you haven't seen this before, I mean, yes, I understand that it's something that may not be relatively new to everyone, but you know, there's a wide variety of controls that you can use in here. So a very basic example would be an autocomplete box where, you know, as you're typing an input, you get a set of complete statements. Very simple for folks to integrate and do. You can go ahead and utilize context menus, which is that tap and hold mechanism where as you're providing feedback via touch, that allows you to drive the plumbing along, if you will. So you can go ahead and implement those. A lot of these are just consumable via XAML. And as we talk about Windows and Windows 8, obviously you have the HTML flavor there that you can target as well. But with Windows Phone, I mean, you have a wide variety of controls to choose from. Date and time pickers, obviously, very popular. So those ones are well. And when thinking about these, they all have to be thumb and finger friendly, right? So that's why you're seeing them actually expand in that way. So you can see we have a wide variety of controls in here, the basic ones as well as gestures. So we can tap to center, tap and hold to reset, for example. These and other types of operations are just simply gestures that you can implement inside of your applications. There's a wide variety of these available through the Phone Toolkit. Some of these are somewhat very simple. Other ones are a little bit more complex. If you're building out, for example, an application that requires ratings, to be able to slide a thumb back and forth, these and other types of controls are very useful in the context of building out these phone applications. Great. So another framework is Callisto, which is by Tim Heuer. Callisto provides similar types of these building blocks. However, in this instance, we're targeting Windows 8 and the WinRT. So we have a variety of operations for things like flyouts. We can incorporate a variety of settings in our application. Remember how we have these setting control bars that we can integrate with. Other types of operations like tilt effects, tap effects, and things like that as we're integrating with these. Ratings, which are always popular as well, and other types of controls, you're going to want to start to incorporate as part of your design for applications. Now, obviously, some of these are going to be a little bit more nuanced than others, but you can see that all of them are built with a notion of touch and flow for all of your Windows 8 and Windows Phone based applications. So that's just a very primitive but simple example to kind of give you a sense of what's available in certain cases. Now, because I work for Telerik, we obviously specialize in this space. If you haven't seen Telerik, this is telerik.com. You can go check us out. We have a wide variety of software solutions there. But we're traditionally well known for our dev tools and our UI controls, which I'd like to kind of highlight. So if you're interested, we have a variety of controls that allow you to target Windows 8. These are our RAG controls for Windows 8. We have both support for XAML and for HTML. We also have a set of controls, over 60 controls for Windows Phone, ranging from the ones that you may have seen to everything in between, as well as some cloud-enabled controls as well for synchronization. And so what I'd like to do is show you a quick demo of that as well. These demos you can download off the store, by the way. So if we take a look, here are our XAML controls. We have a wide variety of controls for charting, so you can see that you can integrate these inside of your applications. We do incur, obviously, towards the design aesthetic, very clean UI for those types of operations. If you're doing other types of charting, we have those controls as well. We have a grid control. This is something that some of these controls you won't find inside of the SDK. So a grid control that's touch and finger friendly, for example, that allows you to do sorting, filtering, paging, reordering of columns, things like that, pivoting on a variety of operations, as well as things like sparklines. So these and other types of little mini UI controls allow you to integrate directly within your application to give some pop. Other types of controls that we have include a calendar control. So obviously, some of these are a little bit simpler in nature, but they do give you an ability to integrate directly within your application. And the way that this is done is very simple. Through the simple design paradigms that we have for both XAML and HTML, where we declaratively write out our control name and then data bind directly to the events that are surfaced up. We have an interesting control here called a hub tile. You can kind of think of this as like sort of like the start page for your application itself. These have the notion of interactivity and animation, so you can have these updated. And this is, again, running with inside the context of your app. So you might think of a dashboard application that you might want to write that utilizes a concept such as this. And so these and other types of applications are now conceptually possible and gives you that short circuit into building an app that your customers will love. Another type of control set that you might want to target, obviously, is for Windows Phone, which we also have support for as well. So these are our RAG controls for Windows Phone. And these ones are, in a similar vein as RAG controls for Windows 8, provide a whole set of controls that you can use for using within the context of your app. We have chart controls, we have cloud-enabled or synchronization support controls. And again, you can download these and check them out yourself if you wish. We have a rich inline editor control that you can use. So you can go ahead and choose from a variety of formats that we want for editing against images. I won't use that one, but I'll use a different one. So we have a list box control, very high-performant list box control, really good performance on the virtualization side, supports reordering of elements. So if I want to, I can go ahead and take an element here and reorder that and then bring it in line here. We also have, obviously, the notion of pull to refresh, wrap mode, which is a very popular mode, and we have a nice bug here, which is awesome. Actually, that's the debugger kicking in there. Wow. Awesome. Fantastic. I'll have to talk to the devs about that. All right. Don't go to that demo. Awesome. So we have a wide variety of controls you can check out there, and I won't bore you too much with that. So definitely. Cool. So talked about the interface. Let's talk about something that's a little bit more meaningful, such as the guts. I mentioned the fact that I won't be talking about a variety of frameworks that are available for MVVM and other sorts of things. And I'm not going to talk about too much about things that require getting data in and out of your application. Obviously, that space is well understood. Microsoft has a wide variety of solutions there. There's a wide variety of third-party solutions as well. I did want to mention some that are interesting. I've talked to a lot of developers, and some of them have told me about Fadi, which is really, really interesting, this notion of being able to weave .NET assemblies at the IL level. And the reason why this one is interesting in particular is because of the sort of things that it's capable of doing. So for event notifications with observable collections and iNotify property change and things of that nature, oftentimes it can be quite arduous to try and decorate your classes with those with that inheritance model, as well as the implementation of interfaces and things of that nature. With a framework such as this, you can actually do it during build time and weave that implementation within your assembly simply during the build execution. There are a variety of other extensions as well that allow you to do things like checking for null parameters and throwing argument null exceptions, as well as a variety of other ones as well. This one comes up a lot. This is what they like to call click once but works. This is called Shimmer. This one is has been mentioned to me by a lot of developers as a go-to framework for implementing click once within their applications for auto-updating, et cetera. So I'll just quickly jump over to the GitHub repo here and just briefly show you some of the things that are available here. So the way this works is during the build process, you can go ahead and utilize the APIs that are available there for modifying the assembly. And this basically allows you to integrate a lot of plumbing code so you don't have to write it. And the reason for this, as they describe, is that this notion of weaving is fantastically powerful. And they cite a couple examples. So the ability to implement iNotify property change implementations, check for null exceptions, and things like that. So these are just basically extensions that people have written that integrate with this framework. And will basically, as part of a step, augment your existing IL with those checks. So an example here is I have a variety of input elements that are coming in, and I want to be able to go ahead and weave in all of these checks for null arguments by throwing argument null exceptions. And so by taking this example here, we can decorate through attributes what is allowing null and what isn't. And then what is actually compiled after the fact is what you see here. I know this isn't terribly readable here, excuse me. So what I'll do is, there we go. So you'll see that we have these properties here that will go ahead and do these null checks for you as part of the build step and then return a invalid argument exception or null argument null exception for those examples. But there's a wide variety of plumbing tasks available as part of this. So you can see these are all the add-ins that are available there. So we have add-ins for integrating iCommand properties and implementations. We have the ability to obviously check and add for a empty constructor when a non-empty one is defined. Enable faking. We have a variety of ones for freezable, for the freezable pattern. Mixins, mutable objects, null guards, things like that. So definitely something we're checking out. And again, giving you that short circuit into implementing these as part of a build step. Great. All right, so this is my favorite section, the toolbox. There's a wide variety of tools out there, some of which are quite popular, others which are not so well known. And what I wanted to do is just mention a few of them that I've used in the past. Some of them may have used as well, and some of them are actually quite popular. LinkPad is obviously a go-to one. If you're constructing anything related to Link, this is your go-to tool. And I know Joe's here. He's going to be doing a presentation later on about all the ins and outs of LinkPad, I'm sure. Joe's from Perth, by the way, so good local boy. And LinkPad is a wonderful tool for doing anything related to language integrated query. It provides a wonderful interface for doing these things and gives you a lot of information about deconstructing these things. Another one is XAML Spy. This is by a gentleman in the Netherlands who really is. I used this tool many years ago, actually, and at the time it didn't really give me that much information, but he's done a wonderful job touching it up and giving me a lot of semantic information about what's happening inside your applications. This is very similar to Spy++ and other types of tools you may have used in the past where you can drill into an application and particularly a XAML-based application and see what's happening inside it. Get a sense of the object layout, the tree, and see what's operating against those objects. We have a tool called JustTrace, which allows you to get a wide variety of information about the execution of your applications. This is basically a profiler and management tool for memory, and allows you to identify a lot of problems in terms of performance as execution of your apps are running. Another one is Fiddler. This one's great for debugging anything that's occurring on the network stack. This is a proxy trace that runs on Windows, although there are builds, and you may not know this, but Eric's been working on a build for Linux as well as macOS that's running through Mono, so that gives you an option there if you're interested in using that. So Fiddler is a proxy trace tool that allows you to capture HTTP traffic as well as HTTPS traffic and really debug what's happening against your servers. This one's incredibly useful because it allows you to do a wide variety of operations, including doing auto-responding and evaluating of statements against servers. Another one, of course, is the stuff that's coming from Nokia. They've got some wonderful SDKs available there. Their imaging SDK is fantastic, and they have a wide variety of control sets that you can use going forward for Windows Phone development. So I just wanted to briefly show you a demo of some of these tools. If you haven't seen these before, they should be part of your arsenal. So this is LinkPad, and LinkPad provides a great, wonderful IDE-like experience for basically debugging any number of languages and statements against code running in a link query. So here we have an array of numbers, and we're performing a set of where clauses and order by statements against the tool. And when we execute these in context, we get this beautiful sort of tree structured model that allows us to see into the execution, the matching steps for the execution of the link query. But the nice thing about LinkPad is that there's a whole variety of samples that come with the tool itself, as well as you can also drill down into all of the certain aspects that get involved with conducting link queries, as such as drilling down into what was generated on the wire for the backend database, et cetera. Another one is XAML Spy. So this one you can check out. This one's a wonderful tool, and my evaluation of coffee has expired. Fantastic. I'll show you the website. Apologies for that. I should have checked that, actually. So if you go to XAMLspy.com, this is a great tool that allows you to walk up to a running application and a WPF-based application and drill into the basic plumbing of how that application hangs together. So you can actually take a look at and evaluate all of the aspects of the application itself. And you can take a look at everything from performance, so the memory that it's consuming over time, everything from that into the object graph that it represents for the visual tree that's being done. And so it's a wonderful tool. I've used it in the past many times. Obviously, I haven't used it recently, but I was quite impressed by it when I was researching XAML Spy for this talk. Another one is JustTrace. JustTrace from Telerik. This is a similar tool to XAML Spy in some sense. This is a tool that allows you to drill into performance and memory problems. And the reason why I mention this is because from a tooling perspective, really, these types of tools are really going to help you try to identify where the bottlenecks in your applications may exist. So an example might be if I'm wanting to diagnose what's happening inside of an application. You can see we have a wide variety of profiling sessions that you can conduct, including against Silverlight if you wish. We've recently enabled support for ASP.NET, as well as being able to generate the trace statements for the SQL that's generated against the backend database. So I can go ahead and do a profiling session here for performance. And when that's done, we can go ahead and kick off the application and see live what's happening underneath the covers for the application running in context. The reason why this is useful because it's going to show you hotspots that occur inside of your application. So if you're writing an application today and you want to ensure that the end user experience in terms of performance is as good as it can be, this is really where tools like JustTrace, XAML Spy, and others are really going to help you identify those problem areas. You can see that when we complete execution, we identify the hot areas where most of the time is being taken. We can go ahead and identify potential bottlenecks by analyzing them and then giving you prescriptive guidance on how to fix those problems. Another one is Fiddler. I'm not going to bore you with that one. There's a wide variety of examples out there and a wide variety of videos available online. Another one is Test Studio. Test Studio is a great solution for debugging and testing out projects. We do support WPF as part of this as well, in addition to web tests. So you can go ahead and basically capture a series of execution statements against an interface whether that's WPF, Silverlight, or even web. In this instance here, I'll go ahead and just configure it to run it against our decompiler called justdecompile. And what this will allow me to do is just simply start to record a series of actions occurring against this WPF application, and then run those in subsequent runs against the application. So what's happening here is we've attached a profiler, a watcher, if you will, to the running app here. This is a WPF-based app called justdecompile. And we have this mode here called hover mode, which basically allows you to identify those elements that you want to test against. So the idea here is that I want to verify that certain tree views are populated, that certain tree view items say certain things. And so what I can do here is I can conduct a variety of quick tasks that will allow me to verify whether certain elements are visible, whether certain text is available in certain cases, and things of that nature. And once those are done, I can then kill the application, and then I have this series of steps that I can play over again and again. So that's Test Studio, another tool available to you if you're looking at testing. So analytics is another one that I wanted to mention briefly, and the reason why I wanted to mention it is because I think it's something that a lot of developers really should care about. And the reason why I say that is because analytics can give you a lot of interesting information without any interaction with your customers. The idea here is that you can use a wide variety of analytical tools to be proactive about solving problems. So if an application crashes, that's an opportunity for you to report back what may have occurred and be preemptive of solving that problem before customers actually find it themselves and report it. So we have a solution for this called Equitech that you can go ahead and integrate through a wide variety of platforms. We support iOS, Android, we support Windows, Windows Phone, Windows 8, as well as COM if you're at that level, and even Compact Framework. Yes, Compact Framework. So you can use those and start gaining a lot of insights into the execution of your application. So before I hand it over to Adrian, I just wanted to briefly show you what this looks like. So the way that this works is you'll utilize Equitech, the framework itself. We have just basically a monitor that sits within the context of your application. And what this monitor does is it just basically captures a wide variety of default data. So that default data will include things like where was the application used, what environments was that application used within. And then additionally to that, you can drill down into things like what versions of the application have been deployed, how long have they been used for. We have some really powerful features here that allow you to gain insights into what were the most used features of the app. So here what you're seeing is a breakdown of the number of times a certain feature has been used based on that capability. So for the GUI, we can see here that this view report operation has been used 63% of the total time. So that gives me insights into where I should be driving my next feature release or where I should be driving bug fixes to. Probably one of the most powerful aspects of Equitech is the ability to trace where exceptions are occurring. So using this small monitor, we can actually capture exceptions in the context of a catch statement and then report them back. So the idea here is if you actually have shipped a new build and all these exceptions start being generated, then obviously someone has broken it somewhere. Not only that, you can actually drill down to the individual exceptions themselves. So you can sort by the number of exceptions that have been generated, drill down into that exception, and see the whole call stack. So the nice thing here is that you actually get visibility into not only what happened and when it occurred, but how it occurred. And analytical data is critical for that part of the discussion. So before I turn it over to Adrian, who's going to talk a little bit more about what Splunk's doing, I just wanted to give you some related content here that you can go ahead and check out. So there's a wide variety of sessions here that I'd highly recommend you check out. Many of these relate to Windows Phone development. Lewis is doing two sessions. Joseph is doing one, obviously, that relates to LinkPad. And then Nick's doing one later today on Windows Phone development, which is great. We're not alone in this. There's a wide variety of tools out there. So I'll turn it over to Adrian to talk a little bit more about what Splunk does.
Awesome. Thank you, John. So select player two. Yes, let's do that. So this is me. I work for Splunk. I am the worldwide Microsoft practice manager for Splunk, which means I basically get to develop a whole bunch of tools for Microsoft and for the developers of Microsoft technologies. Well, we're going to talk about the Splunk platform. That's our tool. How you can use it, how you can get it, how you can get data into it, how you can get data out of it. So, and the real focus here is around that event data. So continuing on that analytics service, the stuff that you guys write is only just one part of the overall picture. In general, you pass your applications along to an IT operations group, or you release them out into the wild, and they are serviced by a whole slew of different environments, whether it be security systems, firewalls, SQL databases, virtualization technologies. And when there's a problem with that environment, it's not just your application that's being dealt with there. So how do we actually deal with the correlations between all the information that you need to do to diagnose a problem? That's what Splunk does. It takes in, let's call it absolutely anything. There are two requirements. It must have a timestamp, or we must give it a timestamp, and it must be text, or you must convert it to text. So that's what we mean by absolutely anything. There's a whole slew of things down here. And the important thing here is you don't have to shove it into anything. It's just there. No upfront schema, so you don't have to shove it into some sort of table in a SQL database. There are no custom connectors to write for our stuff. There's no database behind the scenes, and there's no need to filter and forward the information so you get information out of it. Where we deal with developers is really in three areas. The first area is we enable you to trace your code through all the systems that comprise your service. So that gives you a tightening debug cycle, allows you to release better quality code. The second piece is when you pass it over the wall to your IT operations group, or if you're in a DevOps place, when you actually release that code, you'll be able to get all the information that you need in order to diagnose the problem properly through all the pieces that comprise that. And the third thing is, if you want to build in what we call management porn, the charts and graphs that say the service is up and running and here's how much money the CEO made this week and things like that, then we give you the capabilities to do that relatively easily, even when there's a lot of data. And these days, with mobile devices and with the Internet of Things and you know other emerging technologies like that, there is a lot of data. Our top customer, just as a for example, and wrap your brain around how much data this really is taking in 100 terabytes a day. That's 10 of those disks every single day. We like developers. We actually construct all of our systems with developers in mind. We've got developer support across the Splunk stack for Microsoft.NET, for Java, for JavaScript. We're very popular when you're talking about the click tracing. If you like Ruby, PHP, Python, then we've got that. And if you like just talking REST, we've got that as well. And it really goes across everything from the data ingest, the searching, the visualization, the alerting that you need. So here's the idea. And if I could give you one thing to take away, it's Splunk can help you develop, Splunk can help you support, Splunk can help you visualize your data. So how do we really do that? Last time I checked, logging was still the number one mechanism for diagnosing problems in your code. I haven't come across a developer yet that sometime in the last week has not inserted a log statement saying, I got here, or something to that effect. Just to work out where am I in the code, and you know I don't want to run a debugger and do the full trace because I have to trace it across five different systems. Let me just put a log statement here and just throw it in there. So this allows you to actually get in. I am going to give you one tip that I wish every developer would take away, which is use semantic logging. Because the reality is with today's systems, developers are not the only people that look at development logs. IT operations, marketing, sales, they all look at logs as well. So when you're logging, latch onto this effect of semantic logging, which is basically designing your logs so that they can be read by things, not people. That means, yes, have human-readable events. We still want you to read your logs. We don't want binary. But key-value pairs, separate out multi-values, include a unique transaction ID so that you can correlate it with other things. Really comes down to it. So a couple of examples for you. Hurricane Labs, does anyone know the IPv6 guys in the US? They produce a whole bunch of dashboards that show the uptake of IPv6 across the internet. All that is driven by Splunk on the back end. Comcast is a cable provider, again, in the US. I've got plenty, unfortunately, I'm from the US, so I get plenty of examples from the US. They produce a DVR, a digital video recorder box. And so they want to know, number one, when it breaks. Number two, when someone calls in, what have they been doing? But number three, what have people been watching? And how often do they watch their programs? And how often are the various channels in their packages actually watched? So that allows them to fine-tune their offerings. So you've got one thing, a reporting mechanism back to their central office covering IT operations, customer help desk, and sales and marketing at the same time. And it's all the same data. So with that, quick reference on the dealing with this from C#. First bit, download Splunk. Splunk is a free download. We even give developers free licenses, so really no reason. Go to www.splunk.com. There's a big green button in the top right corner that says free download. That's the easy bit. Number two, get the SDK of your favorite language. We obviously like C# in Microsoft land, but there are other languages out there, the most notable one being JavaScript for most people. Number three is get a dev license. We have developer licenses. We give away 10 gigabyte per day licenses that allow you to ingest all your data from all your systems to deal with your systems. So, and then finally, read the tutorials. The first couple of pieces of code that I'm going to throw up there are dealing with generating data. So how do I inject data into the system? One of the mechanisms is if you've got a Windows phone or you've got a Windows application and you want to know where is the user actually clicking. Not which button he's clicking on, but what were the coordinates on the screen? What was he doing at the time? Was it in the background? How often did it fall out of scope? That sort of thing. So for those consumer-grade applications, we have an authenticated feed. Basically, you set up a connection, and then you write out the messages. And again, semantic logging. You'll hear me talk about that all day if you let me. It's not the only way to get data in. It's the common one for the consumer applications. For everything else, log files, Windows event logs. I use Commons Logging for the log files, so it's another tool that is relatively good. Syslog, if you've got Unix or you've got network devices. Perfmon, WMI. We have this concept of modular inputs that allows you to write PowerShell or feed MSMQ or any other .NET code that you want. So that's that bit. Let me switch over to my demo, because I do have, in the slides which you get a copy of, I do have examples of how to do searches and stuff like that with .NET, but I thought it would be useful to actually just take a look at the interface that you get on the other end, on the web interface. And here I've got a whole bunch of, if I just bring up some data, let's just bring up some ULS logs from my SharePoint server. And it's literally as simple as that. You can search these in real time. You can do alerting in real time. And I'm just going to search for exceptions. Seems fairly easy. And you can see the timeline out there. I've got this big spike of a timeline. So I can actually drill into these and see what the events are. But one I'm interested in, probably when you're dealing with this, is you can actually pull out random fields. And this is why you would do semantic locking, is I can just say, let's have a look, exception, colon. And I'm just going to create a field called exception. Yeah. How's that look? That looks like a regular expression to me. And what I'll see when I do this, hopefully, yep, is along my left-hand side, I've created that exception field, and I can see it being pulled out. And if I click on it, I've got my exceptions. I can now start doing analysis on that, and very quickly, let's do a count by exception to figure out what's going on. And very quickly, I've built up a report that tells me what's going on. And I can actually drill into any one of these, and this one's significant to me, and decide and take a look at the, there we go. I knew we had it. Take a look at the actual piece. If I had other fields that were interesting that I wanted to report on, I could pull those out. So for example, you've got a couple of usernames in here. I could pull those out and report on those as well if I was getting a lot of cryptographic errors popping up. So this is obviously a SharePoint thing. What else can we do? We can actually create these as real-time alerts. So if I'm pushing this out to IT operations and I'm getting a particular exception that needs to be reported back to development, I can actually create that as a real-time alert. It'll more normally go into your IT operations from there. I can create dashboards. When IT sees an exception and needs to feed that back to a developer, they can give you not just the exception, hey, this error occurred. Yeah, great, what happened? They can give you the exact click trace from the IIS logs. They can give you the click trace from the actual client applications. All that becomes available to you. And because it's read-only, because we've taken those logs off those production systems, it becomes a lot easier for developers to allow access to those systems. Oop, wrong one. It broke. Yeah, man. It broke. I broke the video. You see, it broke for him as well.
Can I get Matt Denny? Can you just keep talking?
Yep, sure. So I'm just going to read the slides. related to this, we don't really have any related content. We do have demos in the Tech Expo. We have a booth. Right across from the theater, right next to the Microsoft office area. Jag, who's at the back, is our demo star. So if you want to see a bigger demo of the systems, then come and stop by the booth. And the other thing I wanted to leave you with, again, tutorials, code samples, downloads. dev.splunk.com, dev.splunk.com, that's where you get your free 10 gig a day license. We also have repositories of all of our source code. All of our SDKs are open sourced on GitHub. Just look for Splunk there. We have a Twitter, we have a blog. Ooh, there you go. Rapid Twitters. I like the way he thinks.
Yeah. Like pair programming, I guess. I
yeah, know. There you go.
All right.
And don't forget the free 10 gig a day license. Ooh, so that's pretty nice.
We broke this?
Yeah, we broke it. I broke it. You didn't break it this time.
What number are you, sir?
Yep.
Oh, it's the take thing. Hang on. I'm a software guy.
Me too. We broke it. Other resources, the Virtual Academy. I'm a big fan of the Virtual Academy. I use it a lot. MSDN, Anyone not use MSDN here? Really? TechNet, going away, isn't it? TechNet? Yeah, TechNet's going away. That's a bummer. I like that. And Channel 9, all the sessions, not only from this tech ed, but all the other tech eds are up on Channel 9, so you can see me in three different languages.
So what? Let's give these people a little bit more, because we have a little bit of time. Is there anything that I can drive? I can be your monkey if you'd like. I can do this if you'd like. Is there anything?
Well,
I can
had
show?
You had a couple more demos.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, turning back to me. This is Splunk stuff.
This is great.
Let's go off the rails. Who cares?
Yeah.
All right. What else can I show?
I'm going to put a shout out, by the way, Fiddler, my favorite tool.
Okay. Yep.
And ReSharper.
All right.
I got to live with ReSharper.
That's fine. ReSharper's great. So if you haven't seen Fiddler, this is the Fiddler tool here. This is a proxy trace. There's a lot of stuff happening there. And not you. So I have what I have here is I've set up a proxy trace with HTTP support for it. So the way that works is in your Fiddler options, you can actually decrypt HTTPS traffic, and this will inject a faulty root certificate in your certificate chain so you can look at it. This is not nefarious. This is the way that you can do it. So we can just remove that. But basically, what this does is it basically allows you to capture all the HTTP traffic that's occurring against your machine. You can turn this on, you can turn this off, you can capture certain processes here, either web browser processes, non-browser processes, that sort of thing. You can hide all. The reason why this is exceptionally powerful is because you can do some really interesting things here. There's some nice plugins here that you can use. So one example is, let's do some capturing here. I'm going to fire up old Internet Explorer here. I'm going to hit splunk.com. Let's see what's generated here. So we got some activity here. This is what's been generated here. So I can highlight these ones. I've got a stupid ping thing here. That's probably a app. So I'll just clear the output. Let's just do that. We'll hit a refresh here. And you can see we've got some 200s, some 302s, et cetera, et cetera. If I wanted to, I could actually, let's assume I hit a web service, for example. I can go ahead and go into the composer element here. This is a free tool, by the way. I don't know if you've seen this. But you can take one request here. And you can simply drag and drop it onto the composer. You notice it lights up green here. That will recreate all the request headers that were issued against that endpoint, so including cookies and things of that nature. And then you can simply reissue that call against the server there and get a response back. You can also go and do a wide variety of what are called quick tasks. So if you want, you can go ahead and take a look at these just by simply typing help. And these are a series of quick tasks that you can execute to filter and get some interesting data about what's happening in your requests. So, for example, we have a variety of commands that you can execute. So you can say things like, show me all the commands that exceed 100 bytes or 100 Ks. 100 bytes, yeah. So show me all the commands that exceed a kilobyte. Show me all the commands that exceed 10,000 bytes. So here I'm showing images, for example. And then once you have those highlighted, you can go and bring up the timeline, and we'll show you where those actually executed in concert. So we'll show you this is the time zero, time x is when we got the response back, et cetera. These quick commands turn out to be really nice because you can also do things like MIME type matching. So I can do things like show me all the sessions. Well, you can do
image
all.
Slash star.
Yeah, so you can do things. Show me all the 200s. Okay, that means everything's good, you're good. This show me the 301s, which are redirects. Show me 500s, which are like something bad happened on the server. Those things will be handled accordingly.
Yeah.
We can also issue breakpoints. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but you can actually put breakpoints into Fiddler. What this will do is, because it's running as a proxy trace, it will actually capture any calls that are hitting the proxy and then stop that call from going out and waiting for execution inside of Fiddler until that has actually occurred. So I can say, break any response where the machine code status is, say, 404 or 500. So I'll go ahead and do that. I'll put a breakpoint in for 404, and then I'll assume that splunk.com/whatever/... Well,
don't do whatever. That's an actual page.
All right. let me do this. Jump over here, and I'll go 404. So you'll notice that the icon is spinning. It's saying waiting for Splunk, and this is lighting up. So that's because we've actually hit a breakpoint here. So you'll notice down here,
It's hit that breakpoint, and it's paused execution here because it's telling me, hey, that was what you told me to do. So you can go ahead and turn on and off breakpoints. You can do a variety of operations against this, which is great. And then once that's done, you can go ahead and start capturing this traffic as part of basically debugging your pages, which is great. Fiddler is a wonderful tool. You can go ahead and check it out at fiddler2.com. And provides a really good set of insights for you to see what's happening between your client, which could be a Windows phone application running via the emulator. Could be an iOS device. So you can actually set it up so that an iOS device is communicating with a back-end server, and you can route those requests through a proxy, which Fiddler is connected to. Because of the way that Windows works and the way that proxies work on Windows, you can actually chain these up, and that's how Fiddler does its thing. It just chains into the proxy. And so you can capture everything that goes out and everything that comes in, including web requests that issue RESTful API calls. So if you're wanting to debug what's happening in terms of your web API endpoints or other RESTful type interfaces, you can do that through the Composer tab and a variety of other ones as well.
Yeah, really useful when you're doing a client application rather than, you know, if you're doing a web application, you can use the internet developer tools in IE or Firebug if you're doing Firefox or Chrome.
Yep.
That network panel that becomes so useful, this can replace for those custom applications that you're running without adding a whole bunch of diagnostic tools, diagnostic capabilities to your actual tool.
Yep. So there's a wide variety of insights that you get from this. You can also issue what are called autoresponders. So the idea here is that if a certain request is going out and you want it, or a certain response is coming, is expected to come back over and over again, you can issue an autoresponse for that. And that allows you to set up these rules, if you will, that allow you to do some really powerful debugging. The reason why I mention this is because it's actually a wonderful tool to give you insights of what's happening on the machine, whether it's a Windows application or a Windows phone application, much more than you would traditionally get. Do you guys know the heritage of this tool, by the way? This tool was originally used to debug network calls used for the Office Clipart team. So do you guys know Office Clipart? You know that, yeah. That part of Office that no one uses for all those crappy applications, for all those crappy images, rather? They're okay. I mean, but Eric was part of that team, and they didn't have a network diagnostic tool at the time. They would just make calls to this service endpoint, and you know, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And so Eric eventually wrote this tool that would run off the command line to give you what was being executed against the network. And so it turned out that was about 10 years ago, and since then the tool has evolved quite considerably, in fact, and it's actually part of my arsenal. It should be part of your arsenal, hopefully, as well. There's another set of tools that relate to this. Fiddler Cap, which is a tool that you can give to your customers if they look at Fiddler and they're like, oh my God, I don't know what this is, and there's lots of knobs and whistles and blah, blah, blah. And this is good to give to a customer if they're having problems. So they call you up and they're like, you know, I tried to hit the internet and it didn't work. And so you can give them a tool like this and it will do basically the thing that you would normally do, which is capture, record, and then diagnose after the fact. So Fiddler Cap is a tool that you can say start capture, stop capture. So you say start capture. It starts capturing the network calls here. So I'll hit Splunk again. And then once it's capturing those values, and because I'm running Fiddler at the same time, so I've captured 32 sessions here. I say stop capture, and it says save capture. So it's going to save it as a SWAS file that you can then reload into Fiddler and then drill down into and see what's happening there. So this is a great tool to hand to customers if you've got them on the phone and they don't know what Fiddler is and they don't want to use it and things like that. You can give them a tool like this called Fiddler Cap, and it will allow them to do that.
Yeah, the other big tool around network monitoring in particular is the WinPCAP.
Yep.
Series. So if you happen to be using something that isn't the web, or you need to diagnose, for example, DNS requests coming out of your environment, and why is it going over there instead of over here, then you can spin up WinPCAP, and it'll give you a display of what's going on that isn't web.
Yep. So we have 6 minutes left. I wanted to make sure we handled questions as well. So were there any questions from the audience? We can show more tools, but
Anyone in the audience have a favorite tool that we haven't mentioned? No one uses tools.
All right. Fantastic. And the thing is still broken, I'm assuming. Okay,
yeah.
No worries. Awesome.
It's all your
so
screen.
The people who are watching this on Channel 9, the people who are watching this on potentially YouTube, because I'm sure this will make a great video, the video router slash whatever it is, switcher, has decided to it's decided to leave the building. So it's blue. It's in essence it's blue screened. So it's not switching over anymore. So which is wonderful. There, the gentleman is saying there's a tool called Dot Trace. Yes. Yep. Yeah. So Dot Trace is another. Oh, great. Now we've lost internet too. It's all happening here, gentlemen.
You did not sacrifice a chicken to the demo.
I think what happened here was because I shut down Fiddler. Fiddler messes with your proxy, and sometimes it can put it into bye-bye land. Boom! 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 Awesome. It's all happening here. This is wonderful. So DocTrace is another tool that you can use. There are other tools as well. There we go. From JetBrains. So there's a wide variety of tools out there. JetBrains makes a large number of tools, including ReSharper that you mentioned.
Yep.
Wonderful tool
love me some ReSharper.
Yep. Infragistics, I know Dave's in the house. Where's Dave? There he is. Yeah, got a hand up there. So they've got UI controls as well. It's a wonderful community of vendors and people getting along, which is great. The GitHub, the stuff that's on GitHub is worth mentioning as well, particularly around the frameworks that are available. So you can actually go into GitHub, and they have this new feature now where you can actually see what's happening on GitHub. So you can see what repos are trending, which ones are not. Etc. And then you can drill down by language. So if we went to go see C Sharp, for example, these are the ones that are obviously very popular in C Sharp. So Shimmer I mentioned earlier. There's a wonderful tool here called C Sharp Verbal Expressions, which allows you to basically create regular expressions very easily. So using a fluent-like interface, you can create regular expressions, comme ça, as opposed to that whatever you were typing before. Those things
are real regular expressions.
Those things scare me. Other repos include Windsor, which is very popular for containers, Service Stack. What else do we have? Signal R, very, very popular.
Real time stuff.
Yep. Nancy, a good one for building. Against Mono, obviously, is the open source implementation of ECMA CLI. REST Sharp for doing integration with RESTful APIs. So there's a wide variety of repos worth checking out, and these are only the ones that have been trending today. Based on stars, you can also see the ones that are the most popular. Why are you asking for my creds? Love it. Anyways, definitely worth checking out. I think that's enough tap dancing, so there you go. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. Cheers.